All right. Is that your Matthew McConaughey? Are you Matthew McConaughey?
You know,
you and I should be in True Detective season 2, not Jessica Chastain. Screw that noise. We're way sexier than Jessica Chastain.
I'm listening to it and it's like, oh God, have I completely crossed over from making fun of Borscht Belt comedy to performing Borscht Belt comedy now? Am I Krusty the Clown?
And you were
in the Simpsons episode where it's like, oh no, is he going to flap the dickie now?
You weren't doing anything. That we had Klaus Kinski and Jimmy Stewart show up at the in the Magical Studios.
I should have just started going, I saw.
Let's get, was it Mr. Yoshi from Yoshido? Yoshido from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah.
I would love to see them remake Breakfast at Tiffany's and I think if they remade Breakfast at Tiffany's, they should get Getty Watanabe to play that role and just do it in yellow face.
Yeah, yeah.
The entire time.
There you go. I like that.
Is Getty Watanabe, he's Japanese. Watanabe's a Japanese name, isn't it?
I think.
You just made a Frankenhooker face.
I did?
You totally did. We were mentioning Frankenhooker.
Wow. Thanks, Patty.
This is the stuff that everyone loves.
Yeah. Are we on?
Yeah, we're on.
Oh, shit. I didn't know we were on.
I didn't catch you talking about Dawn of the Dead, though. How was your favorite movie of all time? But you were going to say something else was your favorite movie of all time. Fight Club.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually say Fight Club. But Dawn of the Dead.
Is there a reason why you hide behind Fight Club?
No. Well, let me think.
You do realize you're not supposed to talk about Fight Club. That's the
right.
First and second rule.
Up until like the early 2000s, I would have said Dawn of the Dead. I should start. The fact I even refer to it as Dawn of the Dead 78, that's terrible. The other one should be Dawn of the Dead 2004.
Do you not like Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead? You don't like Superman versus Batman versus Dawn of the Dead?
I hated Dawn of the Dead when I first saw it, the 2004 version. I'd like to go back and watch it again because.
The news just broke that Superman versus Batman is going to be called Dawn of Justice.
Dawn of Justice?
Dawn of Justice. Not Dawn of the. Not World's Finest. And not Dawn of the Dead, or not Dawn of, it's Dawn of Justice. So
Dawn
maybe it's
Justice?
Him giving a little hat tip to.
I don't know about that.
Well, no, that's absolutely true.
No. I believe
you're not questioning.
I believe you.
My
I believe you.
Okay.
I've been busy all day.
You've been busy.
And I'm not on Twitter, so.
You're on Twitter. You just are occasionally on Twitter.
I inhabit a being that's on Twitter, and then I disassociate myself with that again.
I think there might still be a tweet out there active in the timeline from last horror marathon.
Just
right at the top.
Yeah. Batman versus Superman. That's such an easy title, though.
Oh, no. It has to have a subtitle.
Oh, so it's Batman versus Superman.
Batman versus Superman.
Dawn of Justice. Oh, okay.
Dawn of the Dead Justice.
You
still don't know about that, right?
Yeah.
You better get on the horn.
Well, I hated.
You better get on the horn with Warner Brothers and give
them
what.
I hated Man of Steel anyway, so I
hated Man of Steel.
I just thought it was, you know, my buddies we were talking about beforehand.
The ones we mentioned off the.
Yeah, I went to see it with them, and I made the mistake of sitting next to one of them. Well, I sat.
It's usually what happens when you go see a movie.
I did, yeah. I sat in between.
I'm going to go sit over here. You guys just stay.
I did that once, actually.
Did you really?
Not with them, with someone else, that's but amazing. I won't say who. So yeah, I was ashamed.
Was that, were you on a date?
You
got bad breath.
I was no. I was on a date and I was 17, and it was somebody else who I said, "Could you like not come see this with us?"
Oh, well, that's different.
Yeah.
Why? Because they were going to talk through it.
No.
I want to know the context. What was
it? It was a family member.
Oh, okay.
I felt really rotten afterwards. I apologized.
Why
and told
did
them,
you not want the because it was a date?
Yeah. But it was like
you didn't
want
to like be feeling up your date while your sister sitting
next to you. I don't even know why I brought that up. I feel stupid now.
That's awkward. That's
okay. I feel bad thinking about it. Thanks, Kevin.
I'm here to please. So anyways.
Okay.
We were talking about Dawn of the Dead being your favorite.
Yeah.
Movie. Dawn of the Dead 78.
No, I sat in between two of these guys.
Mm.
And one of them
in Man of Steel.
One of them likes to talk a lot. During movies. He's probably the one that you're thinking of. He's the one who hates most films and makes fun of all of them. Tall, long hair, glasses.
He
John Braden.
In the past, I have been a little more vocal in marathons than I am now. And we fed off each other.
Well, let's give him names. So John, who's the more vocal one, is on my left. And Scott, who's on my right, who's the adult of the group, obviously. Who is one of the co-owners of Epic Loot, who is...
Okay,
they are
the Epic Loot guys, okay.
Our good friends from Centerville,
there's
Ohio.
There's an Epic Loot prize right there.
Free Epic Loot plug. Yeah, we have to keep plugging
them. Actually.
Oh, hey, Red Shirts hero or the game.
I won that for taking my clothes off. Those are the. That is the.
Oh yeah.
That is the wages of sin.
We start. Right we started the last podcast talking about that too.
There was,
it all
there,
comes back to you taking your clothes off.
Who was it on the message boards that had to make sure it was known that he booed when I started?
Oh yeah, yeah. I like how it
good
was
to
almost,
know that there
almost
some
like I called them out on the message board and said, "Come on, somebody boo." So anyway, I usually at marathons in the past, I've when I go as a participant, I try to have Scott sit in between John and I. Because I know John will talk a lot, and I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I refer to him as my heterosexual soulmate.
Okay.
But at the same time, too,
it's a commitment.
It is. If you knew him, you might agree. But usually I think, okay, I want to watch this, and I know he might talk a lot.
Is this Scott Cause on the message?
Cozzolino, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm probably trying to put faces with
this. We should censor that. It's Scott.
I can.
Yeah.
I can if you want me to. Do you want me to?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
He can.
I have to make a note of it if we do. Because I'll just totally forget.
The following has been censored.
Well, it'll be all redacted.
Yeah.
It'll be the Godzilla credits of our movie.
Redacted.
You haven't seen Godzilla.
Oh, thanks.
Did I spoil it for you? There is a lizard in the movie.
Yeah, I come
and
to your, you know,
I
come to the studio in the sky. I fly up here.
The magical studio.
Magical studio in the sky, and you give away plots to film.
Keys to Godzilla.
Jesus.
Redacted.
So anyway, I sit between them.
Mm-hmm.
Think, and you know, I was coming into Man of Steel thinking, all right, I don't have a lot of expectations for it, but this could be interesting.
Yeah.
I'll give it. And Zack Snyder, I really go up and down on.
Okay.
That sounded terrible.
That's good to know. Sounds more bright.
Whoa,
but that's okay. Go
yes.
on. Continue.
No, well, I liked Watchmen quite a bit.
Yeah,
I thought
Watchmen's
it,
probably his best movie.
I thought what it did well, it did really well. There were some other weird things about it, but oh well.
Mm.
I like Sucker Punch a lot. I was one of the few people, I guess, who liked Sucker Punch a lot.
I didn't hate Sucker Punch.
But I hated Dawn of the Dead. And
of course you hated it, because it was a remake of your favorite movie of
all
time.
That is true, yeah. But I'm not that precious about it. Really, I'm not, I mean, I'm only mildly precious.
I'm not
going
to go like Trailer Park
no,
on this thing.
No, I said precious, not psychotic.
Okay.
What was another one he made? Zack Snyder also directed
Legends of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole.
I didn't see that.
You're not a true Zack Snyder.
I know.
He did.
Oh.
He did Man of Steel.
Yeah. Wasn't there one more?
He did a 300.
300. Oh, how could I forget? I hated 300 when
really?
I first saw it. I watched it again about a year later.
I could just see you in the movie going, "This is bullshit."
Well,
I just, see you
I just thought it was war pornography at a time in cultural history that was
oh my
not
god
receptive to yeah I fall
oh
on that side.
Oh my god, how esoteric!
I know
be.
it's not his fault he made it, but you can't divorce.
You can't say that you go up and down on Zack Snyder and then criticize him for his pornography in 300.
I'm a complex man. Many tastes.
Yeah.
No, it's the audience I saw it with. It was, and again, I know it's not fair, but the audience you see anything with informs how you think about something.
That's true.
And it was with a bunch of like people who were just like, "Oh, right, yeah," and you could tell it was
oh
like the message they were taking
America.
Out of it. Yeah, the message they were taking out of it was, you know, "Hey, brown folks, we're coming to get you." And it just really disappointed me that it's like of all the things you could pick. Well, and it didn't help that like
were you wearing a beret and skinny jeans and a scarf?
I wish.
I just think, people.
Now, I went back and watched it, what, a year or two later, because I thought, I should give this another chance. Because, well, as you know, we're talking about Dario Argento. I like films that are, like, all style and minimal on, like, plot development
plot
or substance.
And character.
Yeah, and I can appreciate a film like that.
And good taste.
I liked it better the second time.
Oh, okay.
I still thought, I got bored about halfway through, because I thought, okay, at a certain point, this gets a little repetitive,
yeah.
And you can do that.
Well, that's the graphic novel, though. That is true. This is the one thing I think it's very hard to criticize certain things because if you say, I'll give you a great example. It's very hard to criticize Bill Condon's version of Twilight because he is adapting Twilight.
Yeah.
So you can't sit there and be like, well, it was a fair adaptation.
Oh, no, no, no.
Good job, but yeah. It was a shit movie.
I think you can also have source material like that and you transcend that in the film you make.
No, that's true.
It doesn't just, that's, I mean, that was one of the problems people had with Watchmen. And it's part of what kind of took me a little bit out of it sometimes was that maniacal, obsessive fealty to every panel of the book, or here's the beats, or him talking about how, oh, we had a copy on set and we wanted to make sure we got it just right. And
oh, it's like, yeah it's like a storyboard.
And I've read Watchmen a ton of times. I've taught that six or seven times in my employment in preschool. All the preschool kids love it.
They love the almost rape scene. Oh, thank God he didn't rape.
Yeah, they're like, hooded justice, complex sexuality, violence, sex. Where's
like
my snack?
What it says about Nixon.
Yes.
Can I have my candy now?
They do. But it's, you know, that was something where I thought, hey, you could have made that film still and you didn't have to have every single moment be like that.
Yeah.
But Man of Steel. Okay, so anyway, we're watching Man of Steel.
What are we here talking
about? I always
about
like
again?
To say whenever you go off on a tangent, it's like letting a kite out and just seeing how far you can let the kite flow.
Well,
and it's like, how far can I do it before it flies away?
Yeah, we're trying something new in this episode by not even starting on the road. We're on the tangent.
We're foregrounding the bullshit.
We're going to hopefully we'll swerve back into what we were originally going to talk about, but go on.
What Bill Hicks used to say, you know who Bill Hicks
was?
Bill Hicks' famous thing that he said in his stand-up act, whenever some of his humor was a little too esoteric or when the crowd got restless, he'd say, don't worry, folks, you just stick with it. And right at the end, we'll have a nice parachute down into dick jokes at the end and you'll all be happy. I feel like that right now. Like, hey, you know, we'll parachute down into marathon territory soon enough because God knows it's the marathon that even six films in is so big, so massive, so immense, so breathtaking that we have to have two separate podcasts just to talk about the first three films and then the next three films. By the time we get the full lineup, we're just going to have to spend like a week every day doing a podcast.
It's going to be longer than 24 hours in total.
Can't you wait, all of you out there in podcast land?
There you go.
All
right.
So Man of Steel.
What were we talking about?
I make the mistake of sitting in between these two guys.
Oh, God.
And I should have known better because there was a chance I wasn't going to like Man of Steel that much.
Yeah.
But I sat in between them, and I was like you with Deep Red at the horror marathon many years ago. I started feeding into John's like disdain for the movie, and I'm just sitting there going, oh God, really? There's the one scene when Perry White and the female Jimmy Olsen and whoever it is, they're running from something, and
when the entire city's falling
apart. It's falling apart, and they run away from something, and there's
spoiler alert.
Yeah, there's an explosion.
They lay waste to Metropolis.
And they stop, and it's like, oh, they come out into a clearing. And right at the same time, John and I both go, splat! And like, because we were kind of just marveling at how ridiculous a lot of that was. And, you know, and Scott, who's on the other side, we've talked about this since. And I think I even apologized to him after the movie. I said, I hope I wasn't too vocal. I think he was okay. He's probably listening to this going, bastard.
He was vocal.
You ruined Man of Steel.
Dick.
Oh, wait, that was Christian Bale. You ruined Man of Steel.
You ruined Man of Steel.
What's your problem?
Swear to me.
Watch the movie. Yeah, now Jimmy Stewart comes back out.
Christian Bale's there?
Yeah.
Oh,
my God. Oh, wow.
We have a special guest.
Bogus.
What did you say, Bogus?
Yeah,
Bill and Ted? Did we go get him in the phone?
I'm bringing Bogus back. I heard a story on the radio the other day of... this guy who was at the Funny Bone the other night.
Okay.
And
wait, like a performer?
And he does impressions. Yeah. And he told a story about how he opened for Metallica once. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they said, how'd you open for Metallica? And he says, well,
I want to know.
He says, I'm on this show in St. Louis as a guest. And all of a sudden, Lars Ulrich from Metallica calls in. This is so meta that I'm telling the story about the guy telling the story about this.
Yeah,
things.
And then these people are listening to you tell a story about
somewhere like in the depths of Harvard.
And then they're going to be commenting.
An academic will be listening to this and saying, this is a fascinating commentary on the modern state of metaculture and popular aesthetics. Yes. So he said, all of a sudden, Lars Ulrich calls in and to promote, I think it was Saint Anger, their new album. And he talks for like 45 minutes. With no break.
Oh, I've met people.
Yeah. And he's just going on and on and on, and they're liking it, but the host at some point is like, oh, we got to get rid of him.
Yeah.
So the host turns to the guy who's the impressionist and says, come here. And he says, hey, Lars, actually, we believe it or not, we have two celebrity guests in the studio today with us. We have Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley from Kiss.
That's amazing.
here in the studio, and they have a bone to pick with you. And the guy starts in on his impressions of both guys to Lars.
Yeah.
And it's like Simmons saying, Lars, we have a problem. The new album, it's nothing without Kiss. Because every song is basically something Kiss did before. And Lars starts in on this discussion with Gene and Paul, and they keep like feeding him.
Why did Gene Simmons sound like Henry Kissinger?
I don't know, because I haven't practiced my impersonation of a guy impersonating Gene Simmons. I'm working on that. This is my new act. I'm going to impersonate the people who impersonate other people when they tell stories.
Gilbert Godfrey impersonating Jimmy Stewart. You want the moon?
Mind blowing. So he said they continued on, and then they said, oh wait, we actually have another affiliate right next door, and Christopher Walken is in studio. And so the guy talked to Christopher Walken, and I guess Lars believes this for about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And finally, later, they say, oh, hey, by the way, that was a guy we had on the show. So eventually, Lars calls the guy and says, you know, hey, you know, call my agent sometime. We should hang out whenever you're in town.
That's amazing.
And Elektra Records calls him eventually and says, Metallica wants you to open for them when you're in New York next.
Wow.
And he actually came in and did 20 minutes of stuff. So, but anyway, Man of Steel, I apologize.
What is this about?
I apologize. But why did I not like Man of Steel? It just... I don't know. Part of it is...
I'm not taking you to task.
No,
there's
no.
There's plenty of flaws in Man of Steel.
No, yeah. And it's just... I grew up on the Christopher Reeve movies, and they had a pretty big impression, even though the end of Superman is ridiculous.
Even though Superman 4...
Well, he meant well. Terrible. Well, okay, you mean well as an actor, it's timely, and then they cut your budget out of nowhere, and you have nothing to work with, and...
That's how you get super eyes to rebuild the Wall of China.
And Lenny Luther.
Uncle X!
Man of Steel, not a big fan. But Batman versus Superman, Dawn of the Living Justice, or whatever it's going to be called. Dawn of Rockets Red Glare. Dawn of the franchise. I would go see, because I like Ben Affleck, and it could be interesting. But I don't know. I don't know that I have huge expectations anyway.
Yeah. Let's not go down the rabbit hole of talking about
Batman. No, because Zack Snyder will get on Twitter and make fun of me.
Will they?
Stephen King, it's
a consortium of people that have created this personality of Zack Snyder.
Stephen King sued us after the last podcast.
That's right, because I called him an asshole.
A cease and desist. If you listen to the previous podcast now, we'll say, well, it's not like burp, burp is going to do anything to us. Yeah.
Yes.
Still love you, Big Steve.
Oh, heavens.
So should we talk about
the movies we mentioned last time.
By the way, to those of you who didn't want to listen to the first podcast because you thought, oh, this is going to be like an hour of bullshit, I'm doing your job now. We're talking about the 666th annual Shock Around the Clock 24-hour Ohio, the 666th annual Ohio 24-hour Horror Marathon this fall, October 18th and 19th at the Drexel Theater in lovely Bexley, Ohio. Noon Saturday, October 18th, noon Sunday, October 19th.
When are tickets going on sale?
I don't know.
August?
Hopefully by the end of August.
Okay.
At the latest.
So we had talked last time about, what were the movies we talked about last time?
The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
The Shining,
and
Nosferatu the Vampire.
That's right, because that's why
Klaus made his guest appearance. Yeah.
Now, what are the movies? The other, because there's three more, correct?
Yeah, so far.
So what are they? Let's hit the first one.
Oh, why don't we start with your
Man of Steel.
Man of Steel. It's going to be Joe Neff's movie interruption. I'll just sit there and make fun of Man
of
Steel
throughout
the entire thing.
We're going to play it, but we're going to play it backwards.
And then
it's going to be about Superman putting somebody's head on his body, then rebuilding Metropolis together.
And then we'll show Steel. And then we'll show Kazam.
Oh, that would be amazing.
And then Shaq will come out and say, "Look who's here!" And we'll say, "What the hell?"
You know, I've got Kenny Johnson, the director. I've got his email address.
Whoa!
it's like Kenny Johnson at
Great. Kenny Johnson's going to be mad.
Well, what's funny is I had bought, or I got for Christmas my sister. 1 year had bought me the original V miniseries.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which he directed and
oh he did.
Yeah, he spearheaded that.
I loved V when I was a kid.
Yeah, and well the movies, you know, because nothing.
I'm not discriminating.
Singer, so, but yeah, the second one's not as good, and it has the most terrible ending ever. Have you seen the Final Battle?
It's been a long time.
Which leads into the series, which so obviously wasn't the final battle.
Yeah.
That was the one with Michael Ironside. That's when he showed up.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the mini, in the he does a commentary on the 4-hour miniseries, and at the end he says, "Oh yeah, if it would shoot me a line," and he gives his email at the end of the commentary, which is kind of amazing. No one would do that now.
No.
Zack Snyder certainly wouldn't do a commentary for, you know, Batman versus Superman: Dawn of the Dead, and then give his email.
Zack.Snyder@hotmail.com.
Yeah, exactly. He might give his old one, the one that he originally, rocketmail.com.
Wait a minute, I have a Hotmail mail account. Hmm.
I have a couple, but I don't know if they're still around. So anyways, what's next? What are we going to talk about?
What's next? We're showing the sequel to Your Next. It's called Next? What's Next?
A wacky comedy.
This summer. From the makers of Porky's. What's Next? Yeah. Well, they're making a sequel to The Purge, so hey.
That looks terrible. Of course, The Purge was kind of stupid.
I finally saw The Purge a couple months ago. I thought it was sort of interesting. Had a couple interesting things to say. Was a little flat after that. I don't know why you make a sequel. It's like, more Purge!
Because it made a shit ton of money.
Yeah, well, okay. No, yeah. Thank you. Oh. That's how it works?
You know, when I watched,
I should get into the movies.
I got the Blu-ray to review, which I never actually reviewed, but I got the Blu-ray to review, and I happened to, and it was the day the government shut down.
Oh yeah,
and because it was before it came out, but I had gotten an advanced copy, and I said, "Well, shit, I'm going to watch The Purge on the day the government shuts down."
Well done,
very
well done.
Meta,
it is. Yeah.
But we're not showing The Purge. We're showing
what's next, and that's you. The audience.
Yes, people, please spell it correctly.
Y-O-U. Apostrophe R-E.
This is not Facebook.
Yeah. Not your next meal.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Boy. Yeah, you saw Your Next, right?
I loved Your Next.
Yeah, yeah. That, to me, is one of the great underappreciated horror films of the last 5 years, easily. And I mean,
it was very much appreciated by a critical community, and when it was did its rounds
audience wise that
but the, it didn't I, it didn't get a whole lot of yeah mainstream well, audience.
And I mean, you know the backstory where Lionsgate had it, and then they went through that reshuffling and reorganizing, and it got pushed back for like what, a year and a half or so, and that's why, because
was it, that like Cabin in the Woods, was it the Cabin in the Woods suffer the same
I mean, Your Next debuted, what was it, late 2011 at Toronto?
Yeah,
and
people went
nuts for it, and then it just kind of sat because they were reorganizing everything. I'm convinced if that film comes out either a little earlier or maybe at a slightly better time, because that was right at the beginning of August, which
can be a shitty time. Yeah. Well, you know, it's not a terrible time to release a horror movie because, you know, Rob Zombie's Halloween came out at the end of August and did incredible numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a crapshoot because
although that is much more of a pre-sold franchise
true.
Too.
I mean, that was yeah.
And Your Next also came out right around the time The Purge did, because that came out about a month later, and so you have
The Purge was in early June.
Was it early June? Okay, same season.
But The Conjuring was also floating around out in the
that
summer.
Is very true. Yeah.
So, but the here's why I don't think The Purge is not and never would have been a mainstream movie.
Yeah. By the way, once again, we're not showing The Purge.
No, not The Purge. No, I mean, Your Next.
Oh, you're talking about Your Next.
The Purge is totally a mainstream movie. It's totally dumbed down. But Your Next relies on, like Cabin in the Woods, you need to come to it with a certain amount of context. I think
it helps.
If you come to the movie in a vacuum, you don't get it. And like I was discussing it with another critic, and another critic was saying, well, it's, and they were complaining about stupid things. People being stupid and being in stupid actions in a horror movie. And I'm like, and let's just say that this is not a no spoiler or anything, but Ty West plays one of the characters. He's a minor character, but he shows up in the movie. And I'm like, I have a feeling that they completely knew what they were doing, because Ty West is, he knows horror and he understands, and he deconstructs his own genre when he makes his own movies.
Yeah.
So this was deliberate. And they're like, no, I don't think it was. I'm like, no, it was totally deliberate. It was, you know.
I mean, it's.
There's a lot of things in the movie that are winks and nods to the horror audience.
That is very true. Now, as opposed to something like Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, which is.
I could see how you could come to that as a non-horror fan and miss half of what they're trying to get to, even though the story itself is kind of interesting.
You're right. Cabin in the Woods still works as a.
Yeah. If Cabin in the Woods.
As just a movie.
Winks to the horror, or maybe what's more prominent, a wink or a nod? I'm trying to think.
Nudge, nudge. know what I mean?
Maybe a nudge. What's in the hierarchy of,
you know,
of gestures?
A nod's as good as a wink to the blind bat.
That is true. Yeah. The degree of winking or nodding, or winking and blinking and nod, or yeah,
winking and blinking
bad.
And nod.
Oof.
Yeah. Was that the 1865 version of Snap Crackle Pop?
Winking and blinking and nod was a fairy tale or I used to have it read to me as a kid. It's one of those thing about like a poem about little nymphs going to sleep or elves or something. It's totally legitimate. Trust me.
I'm sure it's legitimate.
I'm going to call my mom right now and have her get online.
Start reading this to children.
Currently on the line, Joe's mom.
Come here, let me show you my winking, blinking, and nod, little child.
Yeah. So, Cabin in the Woods is very much a nudge in the ribs to horror conventions. And if you don't know those, you're like, why are you nudging me in the ribs? Whereas Your Next, You're Right is more of a wink.
Yeah.
I think Your Next, in
a lot of
ways,
of subtlety.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, it works as a very stripped down thriller. Like, if you go to it, it's like, okay, well, this is, here's some people in the house, and there's an invasion, and what do they do? And it's like a shock machine.
Yeah.
Now, I think it helps you to appreciate it more if you know where the winks are.
Well, and that's why I think it'll play really well in horror audience, because this audience knows. Your Next knows what it's doing, when the characters act stupid, as they do in horror movies, it's in the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it fun.
Because no one acts stupid in real life.
Well, but, never. But I mean, it's really laid on thick.
Yeah.
And if you just watch it, not putting it up against the context of other horror movies, you're just like, wow, these people they're not just dumb. They're just really dumb. And but you kind of have to appreciate what they're doing there, and you can sit there and dismiss it as saying, oh, it's just this whole batch of violence, and it glorifies that. And I had a discussion with another critic, pretty nationally known critic, and he didn't like the violence in it, and because he was almost at it, he's saying that it was at a punishment level. I'm like, yeah, but that's not why it was. That's not what it wasn't just sitting. It wasn't just there. It wasn't like Last House on the Left, which is just there to punish the audience. You know.
Yeah. Kevin, of course, is talking about Al Roker in this case.
Yes, Al Roker.
Not a fan of Your Next.
And then he shit himself.
During Your Next, actually.
And I'm like, Roker, it happened once and it was hilarious when you talked about it on the news. But you know what? This is your new thing. It's like his Urkel tagline.
Yeah, it's like, hello.
Did I do that?
My pants are filthy.
That's amazing.
I think part of what Your Next goes for too is presenting these characters who think that they're very refined.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the marathon audience.
And it pokes holes in them. Yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know how refined the marathon audience thinks they are. I think some people do. Yeah.
But I think there are some people that do, but I think we're realistic.
You talking about me now?
No, not you.
I am refined. Okay.
Yes, you are. Sure. You need to show up for this marathon. You need to have a smoking jacket and. Yeah.
Hello, little people. How are you?
Have a cigar.
Yes, time for another 24 hours of cinema.
Wear the beret and the scarf.
It's always the beret.
Have.
I don't know what the beret is. You know,
I don't know. I'm mixing my hipsters and beatniks.
Yeah. So Your Next.
Your Next is a great film. If you've not seen it, it is. Gonna go over like gangbusters with the marathon.
And it's
crowd.
Very simple in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Except you can't play it at 5 a.m.
No, we wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah,
it's a great crowd movie.
Well, and the reason you don't want to play it at 5 a.m. is because it builds. It takes a while to get to its frenzy. And and you risk people falling asleep during it. As opposed to like Dread, when you showed Dread at the sci-fi, that kind of hits the ground running.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a great movie.
One of the reasons
we
put it there.
Yeah. What was that, 8 o'clock in the morning or
something like that? Yeah. Flash forward 6 months when we're showing Your Next at 5 a.m.
And I'll be like, I warned you.
Yeah. It's like, I have podcast proof that you actually promised that. Refund? Hello? Anybody?
Somehow I don't know what that was. I warned you. I'm like the guy, Camp Blood.
I just want you to get up in the middle of the marathon, take your shirt off, and say, I warned you all. Your Next would play at 5 a.m.
Maybe for the costume contest, I'll dress as the woman from room 237.
That would be, can I just humbly say, bitchin'?
Yes, humbly.
Harken back to 1989.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so you're next.
You're next. Yeah, if you have not seen Your Next,
wait. Don't watch it.
No, don't watch it. Wait to see it with the marathon audience, because what it does very well. And it's a lot of fun, but it's also, how can I say this? Well, you brought
Balls
up
of the Wall Awesome.
Yeah, you brought up Ty West. I think House of the Devil, which we also showed back at Horror Marathon number 3, or Shock Around the Clock number 3, something I really like, and something that I think benefits from knowing that era of horror cinema.
Yeah.
And I think this does...
House of the Devil is a little more of a challenge because, it, I mean, talk about a movie that builds.
Much more slow burn.
Great movie.
Yeah.
But see, that's what Ty West just in this movie.
Here's something, and you probably will disagree with me about this because I'm guessing you probably didn't like this film.
You're going to mention Miami Vice again, aren't you? Or The Counselor.
That comes a couple... Yeah, The Counselor. Let's talk about The Counselor, shall we? No, last summer when I saw Pacific Rim,
I love Pacific.
Okay,
Rim.
Oh, cool. Then,
I love Pacific.
Then
Rim.
Then you will totally get
that
this.
That made my top 10 list.
I love Pacific
way
Rim
way better
too.
Than Godzilla.
And at the end of here come the Godzilla. Wait, oh my God, no, Godzilla fans. That was my fake attempt.
This is the thing that blows my mind about Godzilla, and I'll be curious when you see it. It's just the thing. I gave it a middling rating. I gave it like 3 out of 5 stars, and I'm like, it's good. Go see it. It's a big summer movie. But mm-hmm. here are my problems with it.
Yeah.
And even people I know that loved it, who are like, oh, it's great. It was awesome. I can't wait to see it again. I just wish they would fix this. And I'm like, that's exactly what I'm saying, too. You know, it's just, I think with Godzilla, it's how much you embrace when it is good and how much you forgive the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but go on.
Pacific Rim, after I got done seeing that, I turned to one of my
Pacific
friends.
Pacific Rim job.
Yes.
If this was an episode of Leverage.
Hey, there you go. Now I'm just seeing those robots doing filthy things. Thank you.
Oh, my kaiju.
Yeah. I turned to my friend at the end and I said, you know, this is a perfect case of it's in many ways, and maybe this is because we're all, you know, illiterate or we're not able to actually express ourselves in verbal terms like I am doing right now. But I said, it's hard to pinpoint right now, 10 seconds after the film's over, exactly why that worked. But as a genre fan, you could tell that whoever made this, the Guillermo del Toro, knows his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's almost like, it feels like at the genetic level. Like, if you get that stuff, if you've been brought up on that stuff, you might not always be consciously thinking, and this is a tribute to that, and this is kind of like that, and this is kind of in the spirit of that. But you get it because the person's intent kind of comes through no matter what compromise.
You don't have to have seen all these other kaiju movies for it to work.
And that's what's nice. And to me, it was a really great slam bang, ambitious fantasy monster movie. Why there was such critical reprobation for it, I'm not quite sure. You know, I mean, and to me, that was an example.
It's not, well, I, you know what I think part of it is it's, it, Pacific, I'm not going to mince words. Pacific Rim's not a smart movie. And the honest trailer by Screen Junkie says it's either one of the, dumbest awesome movies ever or the most awesome dumb movie ever.
Oh yeah. And,
and that's absolutely what it is. But it's not stupid. There's a difference between being dumb and being stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, if it's dumb, yeah, it's a big dumb movie, but it's fun. It doesn't try to be anything beyond that.
And that's what I said was that. Yeah.
Whereas like Michael Bay's Transformers movie are just stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. And I brought that up too. It's like the Transformers movies to me feel like cynical manipulations of what a big budget kind of dumb movie is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Pacific Rim felt like, smart in its dumbness in some ways, or well-skilled in its dumbness. It was like, this is what this is. It's supposed to be giant robots fighting monsters, and there are some humans, and they're all kind of caricatures. But it was done well, and it was something where there was heart to it, and there was like a design, or there was kind of a coherent design behind it. Mm-hmm. Transformers, the movies, and I've only seen part one, but one of the big problems I always have had with those.
You've seen the best one.
Yeah. Part of the problems I've had is, as I look at the robots, and this is coming from a kid who grew up playing with those, and it's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
It's this collection of parts or these, you know, multi-tiered things to make it look kind of, it's edgy or cool or whatever. And Pacific Rim, I could at least look at it and say, oh, that's a really inventive monster design, or oh, that's a really inventive robot design.
Yeah.
And there's a real...
Everything seems to work where it is, whereas the Transformers is just shit stuck on. You know, it looks like somebody sneezed body parts.
That's a good
parts.
Way to put it. So your next, that's what this reminds me of, is your next is something where you can tell Adam Wingard directing it and the guys he's working with, they get that genre. And you can tell that in this little coterie of films that they've made with you know, the VHS stuff and House of the Devil and things like that, that they get the genre and they can make something like that that is a tribute in many ways, but it's not like bash you over the head with its tributes. Yeah. It's just, it's something that is kind of a loving continuation of something that's gone before. And it doesn't, to me, those films don't feel like photocopies.
No.
Or just, you know, slavering tributes to these
old
films.
It's not just a remake of The Strangers.
Yeah.
Or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah, that's a lot of words about why you should go see Your Next, and that's a lot of talking around.
But don't go see it, because you're gonna
and that's the thing. It's the beauty of it is if we say too much about it, it does kind of ruin what's good about it.
Yeah.
And that's not saying it's like, oh, my God, it's a woman at the end, or it's, oh, my God, you know, the main character is actually Satan.
She was in Step Up 3.
Yeah.
What?
It's, yeah, that's good. I want to go home and see Step Up 3 now.
Right.
I've missed Step Up 1 and Step Up 2.
Oh, my gosh, you wouldn't understand the concept. It's so hard to follow.
So, yeah, You're Next. Highly, highly recommended. If you missed it in theaters, too, yeah, shame on you. But but we'll still take you in.
Sounds good. What's the next movie?
Which should we get to next? Let's go to the
Leave the completely bonkers one for last.
The Wicker Man.
Yes.
Okay.
No, The Wicker Man is not the completely
bonkers. No, it's pretty bonkers
in
some
bonkers.
Ways. Yeah.
The original, though, not the Nicolas Cage remake.
No, yeah, I'm sorry. I feel so bad. Every year we show things, and now we have to keep saying, not the remake, or not the crappy version.
Well,
not
I mean,
the...
you know, it defends Nosferatu was a remake in, what, 1979?
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is the, as they're billing it, The Wicker Man, The Final Cut. And it's kind of a...
It's what just came out on Blu-ray, like,
yes,
last year.
Yeah. Rialto went back and they found an extended print at the Harvard Film Archive that they'd had for a while and manufactured a kind of a hybrid cut. It's not quite the director's cut. It's not fully that. I think some of the elements are missing, but it's extended beyond what the theatrical cut was. And it includes some other material that enhances the story just a bit. But The Wicker Man is just, it's such a great, it is truly probably the definitive British cult classic film. And
bonkers in its own right.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I first saw it after hearing about it for years, and it took me a while to get into it because it's not just like nonstop paganistic slaughter from the beginning. Second time I saw it, it's very unnerving in a lot of ways. And it plays around so much with the expectations you have of that genre. I mean, Edward Woodward is the hero is very anti-heroic in a lot of ways, or very non-heroic in a lot of ways.
This was what, 1973?
70, yeah, I think so, 73.
And there was a lot going on globally, culturally, that this was addressing with, you know, the sort of counterculture and the conflict between traditional Christianity and paganism and that sort of thing. That's incredibly relevant again today.
Yeah.
That I think should play very, very well, which is all lost in the Nicolas Cage movie.
Just a bit.
Just a tad.
But yeah, it's
although I have to say, I did get a solicitation for
Nicolas Cage.
Neil LaBute's latest movie to screen, to see a screener, and then possibly do an interview. And then in the description of the movie, they're like, blah, 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 directed by Neil LaBute. And what do they put in the Prince of the Wicker Man?
His most recent project.
Is the one that you're, that is what we're, Funeral's most recent? Did he do Death at a Funeral?
Oh, did he direct that?
Or am I thinking of the other guy? No, it's the guy who did I have to look that up.
I forgot. Neil LaBute for me kind of ends in some ways after Your Friends and Neighbors, maybe.
Was that, did he do?
In The Company of Men, and then Your Friends and Neighbors. And
LaBute, just looking this up.
Shape of Things, or
bear with me. Here we go. All right. No, he did Lakeview Terrace after the Death at a Funeral.
Lakeview Terrace. Ugh. Yeah.
So, anyways,
one of the most ham-fisted movies about racism you can find.
So bad,
which is sad because that's a pretty good cast, and
it's a great cast. Ugh. But then again, that was at a time that was the mid 2000s when Samuel L. Jackson was just doing everything. You're seeing movies, and you're like, hey, he was in that movie? Wait, he was in Home of the Brave?
Sam Jackson got to eat. Yeah,
it wasn't just Snakes on a Plane.
No,
Sam Jackson got to. In fact, that's what we're calling the next marathon, isn't it?
Sam Joe Neff got to eat.
Yeah,
no, Joe Neff got to eat.
Sam Jackson has nothing to do with this.
I'm retiring, or I'm moving out of the country and need some cash. Sure.
Yeah. Here it is. Here's that solicit. I just found it. Yeah, it says, the award-winning writer and director Neil Abute, the Wicker Man, is also possibly available to discuss his work for the film. And I'm like, that's who you chose. That's what you chose. That's what you chose. Taking. You know, Spielberg and saying, oh, yeah, Steven Spielberg, 1941.
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
It's like nothing against 1941,
but... the creator of 1941.
Yeah, it's just like, that's okay, sure, go ahead.
But yeah, the Wicker Man, the original, well, the final cut of the original Wicker Man is also well worth seeing. Okay. We have so much less to say about these films.
Yeah, I don't want to say, you can't, again, there's a lot of movies you really, if you've not seen The Wicker Man, knowing too much about it makes it, takes a little of the magic.
Edward Woodward as a...
the Equalizer.
Sergeant as the Equalizer. Sergeant who goes to this island to find a missing girl.
Mm-hmm.
And he's somewhat puritanical.
Just a tad.
And they're not.
Okay.
That's the setup there right there. Go. But and there's more than that. And it's
got Christopher Lee with an amazing hairdo.
Does have Christopher Lee and
Christopher Lee and his young Einstein.
We're kind of bearing the lead here because we're talking about all these guys, but it does have the lovely Britt Eklund.
Oh yeah.
Doing a somewhat erotic dance. A very erotic dance.
An erotic dance. Money Penny.
In the buff, if you will. Yeah,
Okay, now you're fantasizing about Britt.
Now I'm fat.
Well, okay. I go up and down on
Britt just Eklund. Gained 20 pounds thinking about Britt Eklund. So, yes.
There's something really gross about
there
that.
There is,
go
yeah.
On.
So, yeah, the term cult classic does get bandied around a lot, but when you talk to people from overseas, and especially when you talk to, anyone who grew up in England or the British Isles or is a film critic or a cultural critic, The Wicker Man is really big in that sense. Wicker Man, the final cut made it on the cover of Sight and Sound magazine when it came out.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's big stuff.
Have you ever seen The Wicker Tree?
I saw the sequel.
Did you like it?
It was okay, yeah. It's Robin Hardy doing that again.
Yeah. It did kind of feel like when Alex Cox did Repo Girl.
Oh, yeah.
It had a little bit of a Repo. I mean, there's nothing like Repo Girl.
No, yeah.
But it kind of had the feel of
It did. Repo it was Girl. Sort of interesting, and I see where he was trying to go with the modern-day parallel.
Yeah.
But it just... it's not The Wicker Man.
No, it's not.
You just go do something else.
Yeah.
Now Robin Hardy will be mad. Great.
That's right.
Robin
Stephen
Hardy,
King.
Neil LaBute, Stephen King, Twitter.
Twitter, the entirety of Twitter.
The concept of Twitter. So yeah, those two. So highly recommended both of them, although we won't spend a ton of time talking about
them. But let's talk about the next
one. Oh, yeah. Man, The Manitou.
Oh my God. This is amazing.
Never saw The Manitou till last year.
Oh.
I don't even know where to start. It's...
there are
and here's the thing. Here's what I hate.
Most people don't even know this movie exists.
When I always, yeah, they don't.
And that's kind of what's amazing about it.
And what I dread is when I talk about movies like this that play at the marathon.
Yeah.
In the past, I feel like sometimes I've talked too much about them. Yeah. When we showed Hozu. Okay. Yeah. I remember when I saw that at the Wexner Center about 8 months beforehand, Bruce and I both thought, oh, we got to show this. People would love this. Mm. And we played it up like that. We said, this is so bizarre and gonzo. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And then at the marathon, we were running a little behind and we wanted to have people stay. And so we said, hey, please stick around for House. It's a lot of fun. And then we had 10 or 15 people say, I don't know. You played it up too much.
What?
A friend of mine who will remain nameless, but who you can probably know by, if you've ever listened in. Friend of mine famously, and I knock him for this, said, House kind of played all its cards in the first 15 minutes, and I knew where it was going after that.
No, you didn't. It's cards cards that didn't even exist in the deck throughout.
Oh, boy, I never thought of that. I got to try that on him sometime.
It's like playing the cards. I played all those cards. Well, those were just the face cards. I have pinochle. I have tarot cards that I'm going to throw in the deck too.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it too was
I'm sorry,
when we started. No.
Are you still talking?
I'm getting into yawning from the marathon.
Part of it with House is that was when we first became aware of how the audience has kind of changed a bit. Mm-hmm. Because to us, back in the day, mm-hmm. House would have played and the crowd would have just been bonkers over it.
What the hell is happening now?
Yeah. But when House played this time, granted, House played at ultimately at like 1:30 or 2 in the morning instead of the projected midnight start.
It might be a little bit late, yeah.
Yeah, but the crowd, I think most people liked it, and most of the reviews after said, yeah, we like this. But the actual response in the middle of it was a little subdued. Like,
yeah.
Again, like, probably.
Just also, we've seen such bonkers Japanese cinema come out recently.
Yeah, there is that.
So I can see where House wouldn't be as innovative.
Yeah,
today.
But even with that, I think House is so crazy in a lot of ways. Now, in some ways, it's more of a strange, surreal, childlike.
Yeah.
I'm gonna mess up all my words here.
That's okay.
Bizarrity. How about that? Let's just call it bizarrity.
Bizarrity works.
Bizarrity. Whereas
that's
some of
our
the
new website.
Yeah.
Bizarrity.com.
Bizarrity.com. Bizarrity.neff.com.
Jeffneff.bizarrity.com.
.bizarrity.com. Bizarrity. This is the time of the podcast when you should stop it and say, now I got to give a little love to my sponsors here.
Bizarrity.com.
You like bizarre stuff?
Weird
you like Joe Neff? Well, visit jeffneff.bizarrity.com.
You want your own Serbian film, baby? We've got models you can have. Completely functional.
And take Alpha Brain. It's a great supplement. Okay, we're back here to the interview now in present day. Most of the new Japanese weirdo stuff is so in your face. The Miki school of Japanese batshit craziness is so visceral and so just gross. And whereas House is gross.
That's the thing. House is just weird.
House is like, I think I brought it up at the time or somebody else did and I stole the line. It's like a kid playing around with crayons and making a strange cartoon of what a haunted house movie would be. And then there you go. It's made
and
real.
There's your storyboards.
Yeah.
Shoot it.
Yeah.
There's a cat. I don't know what. It's just there.
Now I'm hoping.
What's that? A duck.
Because it's American. People appreciate the Manitou in a slightly
The Manitou's a lot
way.
More accessible than House is.
That's saying a lot, too.
But here's the thing with the Manitou is the Manitou is a movie of its time.
Oh, yeah.
And it has... it is weird.
San Francisco 1979.
So it has those elements. It has those creepy... It has the authentic horror film elements of stuff like The Entity and... And
yeah,
that thing, but it just really does go off the rails, almost like the 1986 version of House.
Yeah, in some ways,
yeah.
I guess.
Although it goes into weird places.
Manitou makes the William Cat House look like The Shining.
Well, and the thing with the William Cat House is at least at that one you're expecting because it's a haunted house.
Yeah.
Whereas, and I'm not saying that the Manitou is not about a haunted house, but it does things that you'd be like, that would fit completely into that movie, but it kind of doesn't make any sense, but it's it has that weird sexual undertone to it.
Just a bit.
Yeah. It's out there.
Well, and what I love about it is it fully embraces the absurdity and the surrealism of what it's doing.
But it also plays it straight.
It does.
That's what makes it great.
A friend of mine who saw it 3 or 4 years ago out in LA at some all-nighter, he brought this up when we were talking about it. And he said, you know, well, people will look at it in some ways like, oh, it's Manitou. It's just, it's goofy. But that's reductive to just say, oh, it's goofy. I mean, it does play it straight.
It's goofy because it was made, when is it, 1979, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, any movie you watch, as we had talked about prior to the show, Dario Argento stuff plays completely goofy because
always
it was
gotta bring
made
up Argento,
in the 70s,
don't
I
you?
Know,
you
Argento.
Always gotta. I'm gonna just rub my head in frustration.
But you have
now.
To. You cannot look at the Bird with the Crystal Plumage and not laugh at the ridiculous fashions. Same thing with Invasion of the Body Snatchers, one of my favorite movies of all time, 1978 version. There's the scene in Invasion of the Body Snatchers where Kibner, played by, I mean not Spock, played by. By Leonard
not
Nimoy.
Spock.
Totally not playing Spock in this
Hello,
movie.
Hello, I'm not Spock.
And they have the big blow up at the bookstore, and he and the woman's there, and right. He's trying to calm her down, and then they cut to the sort of the crowd, and there's this woman with the biggest afro you have ever seen on the planet, wearing one of those flowing muumuus that they'd had that were extremely popular. And I remember seeing that in the early 80s on television, because my parents wouldn't take me smartly because they wouldn't sleep, wouldn't take me when it came out in 1978. But then I saw it, and it didn't look so ridiculous because it was a little bit too close. But you watch it when they do that cutaway, it was just a cutaway to the people, but the fashions are so ridiculous, it looks hilarious, and it actually evokes a laugh at in that point. And that's kind of the way I would say the Manitou plays in its silliness, because it's not, I don't think they don't mean it to be silly. It comes all across as silly because of the time. Do you disagree?
I'm going to let the dead air just speak for me. How about that? The thing is, like with the Manitou, there's one small scene in particular fairly early in the film involving Tony Curtis where it's kind of playing it up for the goofiness of that I always go back and forth on fashion of the time because sometimes, Invasion 78 is one of my favorite films too. Yeah. And I don't remember if the first time I saw it, I really guffawed at that part of it. I'm more disturbed about what's going on at that point because I take the film seriously.
Yeah.
Unlike some critics who only want to tear people down.
Whatevs.
Because they're elitists. Not like you and me, Yang. Trust me, who's looking out for you? This guy right here.
Yeah.
The Bill O'Reilly of the marathon world.
Wow.
Yeah.
which one of us is the Bill O'Reilly of the marathon?
That's me. Looking out for the interest of the crowd out there. You're just an elitist liberal critic. That's all you are.
That's right.
Just embrace it. That's okay. We can still get along. You're just wrong.
You're going to write a book called Killing the Manitou and then make a really boring TV movie of it.
I am. Yeah. Don't be jealous of my success. Okay.
Good. Make a movie that says it happened exactly like everybody told you it happened.
Yeah. Well, like, the Manitou is very much of its time. Yeah.
Yeah.
We could get into this grand debate about what's dated and what's not dated and all that stuff and everything. I mean, and
it's hard to say. When did you see the Manitou? You said you saw it last year. I saw it a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So we are not the ones to actually answer that question because saw it in the 2000s.
That is true. That's very true.
It's more or less seeing it in the context. It's like when Batman Forever came out.
I remember that.
A lot of people, I remember somebody said, because it was the first one with Robin, and they have a joke in there where he goes, holy rusted metal. And it's like, they're on metal that has holes in it, and it's rusted. And it was a nod because people were like, are they going to camp it up? Like the 60s? They go, no, they're going to play it seriously. And that's the whole thing. And then you watched it in 1995. And it was serious for 1995 because honestly, I think the 90s are going to be remembered as being more bonkers in cinema than most people think. People sit there and think that the 80s were silly.
Yeah.
The 90s were nuts. Mm-hmm. But that played Batman Forever played relatively straight. But you watch it now, just 20 years later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had the same reaction. Well, yeah. I think the general thought was coming out of the two Burton films. Attaching Schumacher to it and the team and the initial footage, that it would just be really campy. So when it wasn't, when it tried to play it more straight than you'd think, I remember thinking that too. I was like, wow, that wasn't that bad. Then you see Batman and Robin and you think, oh, well, this is totally over the top.
But he went campy.
I've gone back recently and seen about, 20 minutes here and there in Batman Forever, and it seems really goofy in a lot of ways. Tommy Lee Jones, who's just like, hey, and Jim Carrey being Jim Carrey and all that.
Yeah,
and
it's crazy. I don't think anyone, if you told somebody now that they made and released Batman Forever, seriously.
Yeah.
I don't think a whole lot of people would believe you. And my recollection, having seen it in 1995, was it was made seriously. It's terrible, but it was made seriously.
There was the intention for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think it even played silly when it was released. It only emerged out of its.
Well, and it's interesting because there was all that backlash for Batman Returns. Remember like the McDonald's backlash when they marketed cups and kids meals and things around it. And there were groups
too dark.
And there were groups that said, well, you're marketing this violence to kids, and the penguin biting the guy's nose and the weird sexual fetishes in the whole movie and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I think they were trying to do that in reaction to, they were trying to craft the third film in reaction to Batman Returns.
Yeah.
But it still came across in the moment as more serious.
It's strange because, and that's why I say like,
and the Manitou, the Manitou is going for a fairly serious approach.
Yeah.
The subject matter itself is inherently strange.
And, but again, it's the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Wolfen. Wolfen is nuts.
Yeah.
If you watch Wolfen today.
I've never seen Wolfen, actually.
You should watch Wolfen.
I'd like to.
If you watch Wolfen today, it is, or Cat People. Oh, God, Cat People.
Cat People. There you go.
Another great example of something that if you watch it today, because I just watched it last year. And when you watch Cat People, you're like, it's hard to believe that this was a serious movie. But it was a dead serious movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not meant to be silly. And that's the thing. I guess part of it is...
I always go back and forth on that, too, because I totally buy into the Tarantino mindset that I probably brought up before. Mm-hmm. He used to say this at all of his festivals he held down at the Alamo Drafthouse.
Yeah.
And he would say, you know, it's easy to look at some of these films and think they're dated and laugh at them. But he said, to me, you take a film like this and you want to try to put yourself in the mindset of what it was like for that. Well, it's like Earth versus the Flying Saucers. Today, yeah, the special effects are nowhere near what we can do today.
Oh, absolutely.
And it would be easy to look at that and say, oh, that's primitive. But in the time, yeah, that was pretty cutting edge.
Absolutely.
And I've kind of taken that up over the years, and that I try. Now I'm going to sound like a condescending prick.
Well, no, but that's why I watch movies
yeah,
that way.
You have to. You try to put yourself into that mindset. And yeah, in some ways, it's hard. I know we're talking about the Manitou here.
It's not a great piece of cinema.
No.
It's
a lot of fun, but it doesn't do it in a winky, condescending way. Yeah. They're trying to do a fairly serious film about possession.
Yeah.
And the Manitou and everything that comes with that.
Yeah.
We should subtitle this podcast those films which will not be spoken of, or like secret films, because we're just dancing around and beating around the bush.
The real point is in this that well, I mean, the greater point when the Manitou, especially if you're going to watch movies out of context, for somebody like you or me who saw movies in the 70s and early 80s.
I was 2 when the Manitou came out.
Okay. So. Well, maybe you saw them a little later, but I mean, I saw movies in the 70s and you go back and watch them and they don't hold up. And there are certain movies like Alien, mm-hmm, which transcends its time it was made.
Absolutely.
John Carpenter's The Thing, same thing.
And yeah,
you can watch that now and it works.
Very true.
Does not feel at all like it's a remnant of its decade.
Yeah.
But becoming a remnant of its decade is not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
And you have to watch that. I've never heard that thing of what Tarantino said, mm-hmm, but I totally agree with that. I totally believe it is something that you have to, you can't judge a movie made in 1975 by 2014 standards. You just can't.
No.
Or you shouldn't.
Well, and you're right. And the truly great films can transcend those, mm-hmm, those decades and those time barriers. And, you know, I have friends who think 2001 is dated. And in some ways, yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the concepts
of what
the future would look like, sure. Yeah. But that to me plays like a film that in a lot of ways is still just a great work of art, yeah, that happened to be a vision of the future from 1968 standpoint.
Yeah.
But if you're only looking at that film for the costume, say, or some of, yeah, the production design, you're kind of missing the point of,
exactly,
what the film's about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You have to understand that. Yeah. And that's the same. And the same thing goes for special effects, because like I said, people are finally starting to realize how terrible the effects were in the 90s.
And, yeah, because God knows CGI has no flaws to it, does it? No.
Well,
of course
but no,
not.
it was the early CGIs, the stuff like, yeah, Species and Spawn, these movies that had
Spawn stuff
that looked really super cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then you watch it today, or Eraser with those stupid crocodiles.
I never saw Eraser.
You should.
I'm too good for
it's
that.
Amazing.
I'm sorry.
It's amazing. Amazing.
Well, but and that's the effect that, or that's the endurance that practical effects have.
Yeah.
You will still look at The Thing. When I first saw The Thing in 1998.
Yeah.
I was totally grossed out by the effects. Mm-hmm. It was great. And, you know, you look at it today still, and you know, yeah, sure, it's an effect. But there's a visceral nature to that that CGI is starting to kind of get into. But we're
finally getting to the point where CGI can mimic what you can do. But I mean, it's taken 20 years,
yeah,
to get to that point.
And you're still lacking in some of the gravity and some of the presence that a physical practical effect has.
Well, and I recently watched the 98 Godzilla just for fun. And, I mean, actually, the effects do hold up pretty well.
I agree.
In that movie.
If one thing I could say about that film when I saw it, it was like, wow, I really enjoyed some of the sequences and the Godzilla design. It was really interesting.
And if you watch it, there's scenes in there where the effects break down simply because they were made in 1998 and they weren't made in 2014. But it still looks pretty good. But even then, the effects looked almost impossibly realistic in 98.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can see where a lot of them break. You see a lot of artifacts and remnants of CG.
Yeah.
that your eye is more attuned to. But that's just that comes with time.
Yeah.
And you get that anytime. That's why the shark in Jaws doesn't look any remotely. It looks less real now.
Yeah.
Than it did in 1975.
But at least with that, you have glimpses of the shark.
Yeah.
So you can, it's not the shark, like a CG shark thrown in your face. Like,
sure.
What was it, Deep Blue Sea with Deep the CG sea? Shark
yep.
jumping out and
with
eating
Samuel
somebody?
Jackson
yeah,
yeah. In the 90s.
Love you, Sam.
Or 2000.
So someone at home is probably listening to this, or they're driving home from work, or there's like a 2-hour drive, and they're like, oh my God,
oh
can
God,
we just talk
up.
About the films?
We
God.
Did. We talked
about
the films.
Are you talking
about
the Manitou or something? I don't get it. Well, to you, I say thanks for sticking in with us, because obviously everything we say is comic gold.
Absolutely. We're not editing anything out of this.
No.
Because we were advised not to by the message board.
And we
and we do what the message board says.
We do
the
what
time.
The message board says. Anyway, now what are you doing? Yeah. That was my half-assed attempt at having a delay button or the dump button pushed.
There we are.
If only we had a dump button.
We don't have a dump button.
That would be so cool if we had a dump button.
Okay.
Should I tease anything else? Should I talk about the future?
We do have to wrap up here.
Yeah.
We're running out of
recording space. We've actually run out of recording space. Yeah. We are starting to enter that phase where we're going to talk about the rest of the lineup. And we have a lot of ideas. We always have ideas.
Do we have any other films booked that you're not announcing?
Currently, no.
Do you want to have?
I will say. I will say this, and this there is absolutely nothing official about this.
Is this a test to see how many people take it to the very end?
I just thought it was interesting that with the recent announcement of the Blu-ray arrival of the entire Twin Peaks series, plus Fire Walk With Me, plus the 90 minutes of deleted scenes, plus all that stuff. Yours truly being a huge David Lynch fan and a huge Twin Peaks fan.
We're going to show Dune.
We're going to show Dune at the Horror Marathon. Oh, we've never talked about my come to Jesus moment with Dune back
Dune.
At Cleveland Sci-Fi. We did. The last time I was here, we talked about that.
I loved it.
And you wrote the article about, which was good. You should read Kevin's stuff. It's good. I don't just say that because he's paying me.
I am.
In hot dogs. I did think it was interesting that I put a link to the news about the Twin Peaks and Fire Walk With Me Blu-ray pack on the Marathon Facebook page. And I included a thing. I said, now be honest, aren't there some of you out there who would love to see Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me at a future horror marathon? And we got a very good amount of hits off of that post. The best we've had since, I think, the day before Sci-Fi this year.
Are are you trying to get?
I always push for any David Lynch film at a marathon. Okay. I'm the one who pushed to do Eraserhead back at the Shocktoberfest.
So wait, did you do Fly Away Home at the horror marathon?
Fly Away Home?
Isn't that the one with the ducks or the geese?
David Lynch didn't direct that.
Pretty
what
sure
are you talking? No. Okay, time to make a bet.
Oh, are we making a bet?
He did not direct Fly Away Home.
Maybe I got the wrong.
Who are
but
you?
He directed something.
You should turn in your critic's card.
He directed
Armand
something.
White is probably very.
No, it wasn't that.
Right
it
now.
Wasn't Fly Away Home. It was the guy with the guy on the tractor?
It's a Straight Story.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's not Fly Away Home.
It has a duck in it.
The Straight Story with Richard Farnsworth.
Yeah,
and
okay,
he drives cross country on the tractor. He did it for Disney, so there was that.
Yeah.
I would always love to show any of his stuff. I think, and now someone's going to be mad. I don't know who, but someone will. I think Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me is a very underrated horror film, and a lot of people don't consider it to be a horror film. But I think a lot of what that deals with, like a lot of the stuff that David Lynch deals with in a lot of his films, is stuff that's drawn from nightmare logic and from things that are very scary. God, when I watched Twin Peaks for the first time, the show,
that was great.
Watching, and it wasn't when it was originally broadcast, but
when
Bravo rebroadcast
it. Yeah, that's when I watched it.
I watched the final episode of the whole series, season 2, and I watched that Christmas Eve night, 1994, on Bravo. Scared the shit out of me. Still does today. I like if I had to watch that in a dark room by myself, taps into something that's just kind of disturbing.
I just realized I did the Michael Sheen Twilight giggle.
Good right for there. You. I still haven't seen Twilight either.
You don't need to.
Subtitle of the podcast is I haven't seen that. Last time it was what you haven't seen. This time it's what I haven't
seen. That's right.
But I have seen Network, so I got that on you. Take that. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. And, if there's one thing I think we've tried to do, it's to show things that you might not consider like straight down the road, traditional 100% horror, but that cross the genres a bit. And some of the things we've shown like that have been some of the most interesting things we've done. So okay. I'm getting the wrap-up sign right now from Kevin. Yeah. So it's time to...
It'll just cut out.
Time to roll along, little doggies. Once again, it's the 666th Annual Ohio 24-Hour Horror Marathon. Shock Around the Clock, October 18th and 19th. But we're going to be talking a lot more about this in the future.
Yes.
Should I sing a song on the way out?
Sure, if you want to.
I forget the lyrics to the Happy Wanderer.
Oh, okay.
Valdery, Valdera, Valdera, Valdera. Are we done? Is it over right now?
There.
Yes.
We'll cut. And we're out.